From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Bet you didn't think I knew how to rock and roll.
Lilu Dallas Multipass. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, tonight, it's Monday, August 30th, 2010.
And this is show 095. Apparently, we are both in douchebag announcer mode.
Hey, I'm telling you right now, we're going to have some fun tonight. No, I'm not telling you that.
No, there's no way we're telling you that. Hello! We took last week off for no particular reason other than we were a little busy and didn't have much to say. So hello again, everyone.
Well, actually, I kind of had a reason.
I guess that's true. You were on staycation.
Yeah, like there were a couple of moments last week when I thought, you know, we should do the podcast. And, you know, I know that you want to listen to a new podcast every week and all. But, you know, staycation is about resetting the mind, as
yes.
is a vacation.
Yes.
Like, the whole point is to do things you don't normally do, which is more of a challenge when you're at home.
Yep. And I, in fact, on numerous occasions, refrained from calling you because I knew you were in vacation mode, even if you were theoretically available. I was trying to help you out.
I kind of had that feeling. I do appreciate it. We did manage to mostly create the illusion of being somewhere else. You know what the real key to it is?
What would that be, Storm?
It's breakfast.
Really? Brekkie?
Yeah. I found the second day I got kind of annoyed. And I realized it was because, like, we got up and we just started to have the same breakfast that we would normally have. And if you start that way, there's no way you're going to fool yourself into thinking you're anything but home, you know.
Yep.
Like, we made day trips, but even still, if you start out, just do something wacky, you know, have a burrito if you don't usually have a burrito for breakfast.
Yeah.
Or go to Cleveland and have breakfast there. That would be, you know, a different thing other than what you do on staycation, unless you live in Cleveland, in which case go to Baltimore.
Right.
Anyway, we blew right past an important thing.
Oh, well, let us get to old business.
Yes, awesome business. The Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions is up to 360. That
Ooh,
is such
that's,
a...
That's more than 350, which means we've passed a milestone.
That's correct, and it's an awesome number because it's divisible by so many things.
Yep.
And you can chop that number up. 360, 2 times 3 is 6, you know, and 60 itself is a pretty magical number. Anyway, I'm not going to go all numerology on you here, but yes, we are indeed in a new regime.
Yes.
And let's say this one together because it's so much fun.
No, you know what? I want to give it to you because you pretty much came up with it.
Well, in the front end, I did. You came up with the back end.
Well, nonetheless, in honor of your returning from your lengthy stay abroad.
Sure.
It's all you.
So if you are to join the Brigade of Minions right now, the next 40 people and the previous 10.
Excuse me, 39.
Oh my. Oh my.
The next
That's
39,
right.
Yes.
Because 400 will be a new designation.
That's right.
Okay.
But I digress, or you digress.
We digress, but we're on track, because those people are the big block dandies.
I love that image because it is so incongruous. No matter how I try and picture a big block dandy, it just there's no really properly unified image I can come up with in my brain.
And I kind of want to let you know, you out there, what it means, but I kind of don't, you know.
And we'll see if anybody cares. If you really care, then send a comment or an email and maybe we'll tell you.
Or maybe we'll put the poll up, you know. Do you want to know where the idea for big block dandy came from, or just let it... You tell us what you think a big block dandy is. How
there
about that?
There you go. There it is.
You
That's a
tell
good start.
Us. So as per usual, I have some notes, or mm-hmm. we can just talk about stuff and things or PAX that's coming up.
PAX is coming up. I'm very looking forward to that. We are not terribly over scheduled, which is a good thing. I was just having this discussion with one of our famous friends earlier today, talking about how, like, I think I can speak for the both of us when I can say that we both had a really good time at at Comic-Con.
Yes.
I mean, I had a tremendous time, but it was also directly related to the fact that after Thursday night of, you know, the very beginning of the weekend, we had no actual obligations whatsoever. We got to be tourists and attendees, and we didn't have to, you know, there are plenty of panels we wanted to go see, but there were no panels we had to be on. We didn't have any interviews or anything like that. And that was really nice because we, as fun a time as all our different friends had at Comic-Con, it was an entirely different experience for several of them where it was really just a weekend full of work.
Yeah. Getting to be a lackey and a hanger on and drift around a little bit. And also sort of our recognition level is at a very nice place.
Yep.
Where at Comic-Con we'd walk around and pretty regularly someone would come up and say, hey, you know, good to see you. Hey, how are you doing with Comic-Con? But not so often that you felt like, oh my God, I have to get away from the public, you know?
Yep. It was just enough to still be quite flattering and never enough to really interrupt the momentum of the day, so to speak.
But I definitely agree that, like, the level of how pre-programmed you are plays into that. And indeed, at PAX, we have the main stage show on Saturday night with MC Frontalot and Jonathan Colton.
Yeah.
But other than that, we have a couple of panel-y things and a few we're certainly going to attend.
Yeah, I actually keep talking for a second because I have to bring up the one that I am actually officially a part of, and I got to get the name of it right.
Oh, right. This is, it's not to spoil anything, but with the Geek Dad of Wired.
Yes.
What with you being a dad of a geek.
I am.
It's entirely apt.
And I guess I am. Okay, here it is. Sorry, I will mention this for any of you going to PAX on Saturday between 11 and 12. This is basically anybody who can't get into the Make a Strip panel, because I think it's happening more or less the same time. We're going to be at the Wolfman Theater. It's the Raising Geek Generation 2.0 Role for Parenting Ability talk, basically, as you were saying, hosted by the folks at Geek Dad and just sort of talking about being a geek parent and or parent of a geek and issues and thoughts related to that. It should be fun.
Yeah. So and in general, if you're coming to PAX, if you're going to be there, of course, you know, come and say hi. Not if we have like a big wad of hamburger in our mouths that we are chewing and eating.
Yes. Or perhaps perhaps if we are sleeping.
Right. And certainly not in our rooms.
Yeah. You might want to get out of our rooms.
Yeah. Please don't enter our rooms without our permission.
Yeah. If you know what I mean. But for the few of you who may not be, if you are coming to PAX and want to find us, we'll be follow our Twitter stream, you know, just Paul and Storm on Twitter. We'll be letting everyone know our signing schedule, when we'll be at our merch booth and stuff. And so that's PAX. That'll be fun.
I got to say, like, I'm excited about just being at PAX because there's no other feeling, really. It sounds like a douchebaggy thing to say, mm-hmm. but it's just such an awesome community vibe to it.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
I'm not a hardcore gamer, but it doesn't matter. You know, I'm enough of a gamer that I get what's going on and feel like it is of my tribe.
Yep.
And the thing I loved at PAX East in Boston so much that, I guess we'll be there at PAX Prime in Seattle, is just the old video games, especially the arcade games.
Yeah, I sure hope they have an arcade setup like they had at PAX East.
So that would geek me out pretty big time. So I've got some other stuff that I got written down and some stuff off of the Twitters, or we can do the book report and get that out of the way.
Yeah, let's get the book report out of the way. What's, again, very quickly, for those of you unfamiliar, Storm and I both have little tiny microphone stands that do not reach proper sitting height on our desks. Therefore, we must use a book or books to prop them up to proper sitting height. And we have now made a weekly thing of letting you know the books that are propping up our microphones. Storm, what is your book report?
I have three books propping up in descending order from top to bottom. Nothing Like It in the World by Stephen Ambrose,
ooh,
and it's the story of the Transcontinental Railroad, and I recommend it highly if you are a history geek or a rail geek. I am both. Below that is Mr. Vertigo by Paul Auster. Not going to talk about that right now. And okay, below that is, I have to get the whole title because it's more impressive that way. It is the Report of the Secretary of War, Chief of Engineers Report of 42nd Congress, Volume 2, 1871 to 1872.
Oh, that old thing.
That old thing. It is an old thing.
That's by John Grisham, right?
You know, it's by the American people. That's who owns this one.
It's by America.
It's by America, and America's making maps of the wilderness.
Let me see. What do I have? I must lean back and talk from farther away from the microphone to see. I have 5 books. I have, starting at the bottom, America the Book by the Jon Stewart and the Daily Show writers. Then I have The Laszlo Letters by Don Novello, or by Laszlo Toth. That's some very influential early satire in my life. I highly recommend you look that up if you want to know what I was like as a precocious 11-year-old. Then I have the My Dinner with Andre screenplay, which I have owned since I was 14. Again, I was a pretentious schmuck, but again, it's an awesome movie. Another recommend. Above that, I have Max Brooks' The Zombie Survival Guide.
Yeah.
And above that is one I think I have used before, is Harpo Speaks,
yes,
by Harpo Marx and Roland Barber, which is probably still, to date, my top bathroom reading.
And certainly, you know, much more than just a thing to prop your mic up on. I think everything we put under our microphones is more than just a thing to prop up a microphone.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me see. Do you want to talk about stirring up the Geek Hornet's Nest?
Oh, you seem to have touched a nerve on Twitter in the past day or two.
I did. I didn't realize quite how hard a nerve it was. I thought it would rile some folks up, but it really got some people pretty mad at me.
I think they're thin-skinned, but go ahead and describe what happened.
Basically, I was up kind of late flipping channels, and there on one of the channels, I don't remember which, TNT or something, was The Fifth Element, which is a movie I have a somewhat complicated relationship with. Insofar as I've probably seen it several times at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of great little touches in it here and there, like the fact that Tiny Lister has been cast as the president, and Mila Jovovich gives a very interesting performance in the movie. And it's, of course, gorgeous. It's very, well, in many places, gorgeous. It is certainly a very art-directed movie.
Yeah.
But whenever I watch any portion of it, I just can't get around the fact that it's not very good.
No.
And, my first comment that riled a few folks up was when I said how I thought Chris Tucker's performance in that movie is pretty much the most annoying thing in the history of everything that has ever existed. And I stand by that statement. And I say that as a fan of Chris Tucker. I think he is positively hilarious in the movie Friday. If you haven't seen it, great movie for the stoners, if you will. I thought he was like I would even go so far as to say the word revelation in that movie. He's an absolute force of nature. But in The Fifth Element, Luc Besson, the director and writer of the movie, basically sort of, I think, handed him a big bag of cocaine at the beginning of the movie and said, "Go do whatever, Chris, and I will film all of it, and I will not cut any of it."
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a bad performance, and I think it's as much the direction fault as it is the performer. So I said that, got a few people pissed, and then I thought I would really just sort of step on the hornet's nest to reuse the phrase. I had to. I knew it was going to rile some folks up, but you know, you gotta poke at the cold sore on the inside of your mouth with your tongue every so often. So I posited the fact that on Twitter that The Fifth Element in general is just not a very good movie. And did some nerds get mad at me.
Well, the thing is, people are using different yardsticks.
It's
you know?
True.
like what one person would consider good. Like if it reaches you, it reaches you. And mm-hmm. it's good. It's like saying something is funny or not funny. It's not yep. funny to you. It's not good to you.
Yep.
But I would agree. I've only seen it once, and it wasn't in ideal circumstances, and it wasn't when it came out.
Yeah.
So, but from my recollection, you know, it was kind of there. But I can see that if you saw it at a time in your life, it could have been very influential to you. But I would agree. It. You know,
well, here's
I didn't get it.
Here's the thing: a couple of people made some valid points.
Okay.
You know it. Oh, hello.
Oh, sorry, I scraped.
Okay, you scraped. I heard a funky noise.
That was a scrape.
It is obviously a very intentionally camp movie.
Sure.
And camp is a very difficult thing to pull off, and it is also very subjective.
Yeah.
For example, God help me. I really enjoy the movie Moulin Rouge,
bleah.
Which is about as camp as you can get. And I do not begrudge you your bleh, because
oh, I will bleh all over it is, that all day
because
long.
It is a god awful mess of a movie. It literally throws everything at the screen.
Yeah.
But as with most things of that nature, as you were saying, it can kind of grab you somehow.
Sure.
Like
sure.
In that movie, Ewan McGregor, I say this as a complete straight male, you know, the 12% of me that is gay does not involve any attraction to men whatsoever, but I think Ewan McGregor in that movie is sexy and charming as hell, and goes a long way towards redeeming that movie for me, because he's completely committed to the ridiculous part he is given to play.
I'm afraid we're going to have to pull your masculinity card on that one
yeah,
right there.
I know. And that's another one where, like, you know, if you don't like musicals, you're really not going to like Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
Getting back to the original point, I guess, you know, that's another movie that's sort of very intentionally camp. And for me, Fifth Element is a lot of camp that just misses to me. It's a movie that flails.
Well, from what I recall of it, and I'll say the same of Moulin Rouge since you brought it up,
yep.
is that, yes, there's camp elements to it, but what annoys me, I think about Moulin Rouge, and from what I recall of Fifth Element, is trying to put camp and real depth side by side.
Yeah.
And that's hard. You can do it, and I think Tarantino does it well.
Yes.
But it's usually comes across as you sort of lose the best of both.
Yeah. Yeah. I would concur with that. And like I say, I can't give a valid reason why I enjoy Moulin Rouge, even though I think it probably misses even more than Fifth Element does.
A lot of gay men liked Moulin Rouge. So
yeah,
you're not in bad company.
That's right. A lot of gay men and a lot of 13-year-old girls really enjoy that movie, to be fair.
Sure.
But, you know, like I said, I can't give a valid reason why what sticks in that movie sticks well for me, as opposed to Fifth Element, where just none of the flailing lands properly on me, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, like, Demolition Man, I think of in the same frame as Fifth Element. But Demolition Man was very much more clearly on the camp line, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they weren't going for art. And it had the three shells, so...
It did. That's true.
So...
But all of this being said, another thing that somebody mentioned was that a bad movie does not equal an unenjoyable movie.
No, or diminish its value.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I don't begrudge people their liking of the movie by any stretch of the imagination. I do, however, begrudge their claiming that it's a good movie.
See, I have the same, I wouldn't say argument, but the same little frame of thought with my wife. And that whenever Keanu Reeves comes on our television screen, for whatever reason,
uh-huh.
I will make the inevitable Keanu Reeves, you know, bad acting reference in one way or another.
Yep.
Try to do it differently each time.
Yep.
And she gets really offended.
Mm-hmm.
And each time I explain, I'm not saying he's not a good movie star. And I'm not saying that, you know, that most of his movies, he's enjoyable. But do not try to tell me that he's a good actor.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's the difference there. It's like, it's okay. You can enjoy him. Just, there's no, why do you have to think something is high art to enjoy it? Fart jokes, they're terrific. Yes. Are they particularly clever sometimes, if done by John Scalzi? But by and large, it's a pretty simple trick. Does that mean you should enjoy it less? No. Does it mean you should feel a little bit guilty about it? Maybe.
Just another movie to throw on the pile. Pootie Tang.
Yeah.
Is really a terrible movie.
Yep.
But it's one of those, certainly for myself and I think for a lot of other people, where the part that hits well enough to make up for all of the stuff that's just not very good.
And, you know, I bet a lot of people would say the same thing about our music.
Yes.
I bet you know what?
I wouldn't begrudge them that either.
And I would probably agree, because we already know that most of our music is not going to appeal to a mass audience. But if you get what we're doing, you really like it.
Yes.
So
what you're saying, is we are the fifth element.
We are the fifth element of comedy music. And that's the front runner, I think, for the title.
Yeah, but to finish it off, if there are any of you listeners out there and defenders who would like to make the case that, in fact, The Fifth Element is a good film, go right ahead. Please do. I am not, I promise, you know, to put it in the comments or an email, I promise not to ridicule you if you're putting forth what appears to be at least an impassioned argument,
or at least
as opposed to a "you stink, this movie's awesome and I hate your guts." Puh.
At least a cogent argument.
Yeah, a cogent argument. I won't say that I'm open to being persuaded that it's a good movie, but I am open to entertaining debate.
Well, you are open to persuasion. You're just highly dubious that, you know, given what you know of film and of that film, that you could be persuaded.
Yeah.
All right. I've got a couple of things, some staycation things that don't have any particular point to them.
Sure.
There's a comment or a Twitter suggestion that actually tied in with the story that I don't think I've ever told you at all.
I have a similar one. Maybe you tell your story and I'll tell my story.
Okay. This is prompted, well, sort of, by Tony Fro, who asked about state fair stories. Now, last week, I posited that, like, carnivals and fairs and picnics just suck.
Yes. You got a lot of agreement on that, too.
And a little dissension, and I grok that.
That's as it should be.
Did I say that? Grok that? I did.
You did.
All right.
It's okay. Let it go. It's gone. It's in the past.
So never went to a state fair, but we had the Montgomery County Agricultural Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Which is essentially the same thing. Montgomery County, Maryland, big county, and a lot of it is still somewhat rural, but set aside for agriculture. They said, we're going to keep land for agriculture. You cannot build densely on it in any way whatsoever. So there's a fair, and there are actually animals and stuff and shit, because animals make a lot of shit at a fair. That has nothing to do with this story.
Mm-hmm.
This has to do with the produce stand. And I think this is like my fifth produce stand story. Every year, the produce stand would sponsor a couple of vehicles in the demolition derby.
Ah.
And I was good at ruining my cars in high school. I don't think I had a car for more than 18 months. And it happened to come around this time of year, around the time of the county fair.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a car that would require an awful lot of work to make it truly streetworthy, and approached the boss of the produce stand and said, hey, tell you what, if you cover the cost of entering it, we can do it up as an advertisement for the stand, which is what we would do. We'd paint Gaithersburg produce on the side of these large 70s cars. And he said, sure. And that may be the only time I've truly enjoyed a carnival or fair. Because there's a whole process. Like, the whole week before, it's almost like you imagine preparing for a Fat Tuesday, you know, the big Mardi Gras. There we go.
Right.
Mardi Gras. Just like that, except for in the back of a produce stand lot, stripping a car.
Right.
And taking
it was,
out the
it was
windshield.
It was a total 80s movie music montage, right?
It was. Like, it was a week, but it didn't feel like more than 3.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very bouncy.
Yeah.
And
something not Michael Penn, but what's his name?
Glenn Frey?
No, maybe it was Mike. I was the guy that did the song from Karate. You're the best around.
Yeah, I was thinking the Highway to the Danger Zone.
Yeah, it could be that too. Okay, I can buy that.
And it was great. Like, finally the day came, and there are a lot of rules to it. You think Demolition Derby, it's just, rah, rah, smasher, washer. But, of course, it's very dangerous. So you have to make sure that the doors are chained shut, and there's absolutely no glass. You can only have, I think, like, it was like 2 gallons of gasoline in the tank. Like, and this was back in the late 80s, so it wasn't like as cautious a society as we seem to be today, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't even know if they have demolition derbies now, you know? And it was primed, and this was a 66 Oldsmobile, 4-door, massive car. But of course, everybody else had massive cars too.
Yep.
Because there were still a lot of them roving around in those days. And had my helmet on, and was loaned a racing suit, which was very exciting, with chaps and
it's
everything.
It's a speed suit, Dean.
It was not a speed suit. If only it had been a speed suit. And I remember how hard my heart was racing, because the way that these work, it's not like the ones on like Happy Days where it's a figure eight where people race around and you smash people off onto the side and it's like Speed Racer. It's not like that. It's like a huge rectangular area that they water down so there's not a lot of dust. And it's sort of like everybody parks against one side, and then when they start, you start smashing. But the smart money is to sort of not play possum, but to let the people kind of idiot themselves out first. And then you go in and choose your spots, because you're aiming for the radiator. That's the secret, folks.
Right.
You knock out someone's radiator, the engine overheats, they're done. And I was doing really good. I was like one of the final three. And then something primal just got into me. Just said, no, this strategy thing, and bear in mind, I'm like 17.
Yeah.
Said, no, you know, Hulk smash. And I don't know if there's Viking blood in me somewhere way back there, maybe in Italy, yeah, or maybe the steppes of Russia.
The lizard brain kicked in, though.
Oh, boy. And it just said smash. And I smashed. And that was it for me. Radiator gone. And,
did you just smash into someone, like, nose first?
I didn't do that, but I sort of lost my cool like Chester Cheetah in the old commercials.
Right. You went all cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah, I pretty much. And it was actually the back end of the car. The car itself ended up making like an L shape.
Which cars generally are not supposed to do that.
No, except for the Cadillac L9000L.
Yeah, the Eldorado, in fact.
Yes, the Eldorado. Thank you for picking that up. Yeah, they shouldn't do that. And yeah, so that was it for me. But I still felt like a hero. So that was the only time I've ever enjoyed a state fair or carnival.
Uh-huh.
So what you got?
Interesting tale. I have got somebody on the Twitter. I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, because I have a bunch of other windows open. So whoever you are said, talk about first apartment.
Yes.
I don't think I have talked about this story on the podcast before, and if so, it's been a long time. So,
you have not.
I am going to talk about my apartment in college. I lived there my junior and senior year. It was a little 2-bedroom place that was attached to my friend's fraternity house. It wasn't inside. It was like this sort of, it shared a wall, but they had separate entrances and there was no way to get from one to the other. I think it was where sort of the house mother used to live back in the days when you needed that kind of thing or something.
It's where the Shabbos Goy would stay.
Yes, the Shabbos Goy would stay there and do things on Saturday. In any event, I lived there my junior and senior year. In my senior year, I got to move to the big bedroom. And I will also preface this by saying that I had a waterbed in this apartment, not because I was a 1970s porn film actor.
Not at the time.
But they had a lot of the people in the fraternity had waterbeds. So as such, there were a lot of spare waterbed frames and mattresses up in the attic of the place. And me not wanting to spend money on a bed or even mattresses, I just used one of those. And it was comfortable. I enjoyed my waterbed years.
Wow, it's like Pi Kappa Scuba.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely not for those who like a firm mattress, but I went through my waterbed times, and that was fine. The main point of it, though, not really having anything to do with the waterbed, but the fact that it was right down on the ground. You know, there was no frame
sure.
or anything. It was just this, you know, metal box frame right on the carpet and the mattress inside there.
Really was waterbed.
Waterbed, yes, exactly. So this was also, you know, it was an apartment that I wasn't in an apartment building with superintendents and anything like that. We were sort of left on our own to decorate it and do with it as we please. You know, we repaint the kitchen or mm-hmm. something like that. And I got it in my head relatively early in my senior year that I just thought it would be a cool thing to paint my room with, like, you know, those sort of bioluminescent, not bioluminescent, luminescent, like stickers, like stars and moons and things you can get.
Yeah, I would see those in like the comic books and think it would be the coolest thing in the world. You know, like when I was 9, I wanted to get those and decorate my room
with
them. Yeah,
I thought that would be cool. And then I went one thought further because I happened to be near a arts craft store at the time I thought of this. And while I was looking for the stickers, what I found was luminescent paint.
Oh, my.
A couple little, like not a ton of it, you know, a couple of those little sort of film canister sized jars of this paint.
Right. Like a craft size.
Like testers, model paint size.
Right. For making UFO models.
And so being the loser that I was, I didn't do a lot of socializing in college. You know, I didn't go out and party every weekend. I was no longer in the marching band as I had been. So my weekends were essentially free. And I bought a couple of jars of this thing and a couple of little paintbrushes. And over the course of a weekend, literally covered my room in little luminescent stars. I'm probably using the wrong word. Is it luminescent? It's
yeah,
close enough.
Sure. Glow in the dark.
And this gets us back to the fact that this was a cheap little apartment. All of the furniture was secondhand. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a little desk and a little dresser and very little else furniture-wise in the room and an old television set.
Yeah.
My point being that I literally covered the ceiling and walls of my room, floor to ceiling, with these stars. And I had little, you know, clusters here and there. Other areas were a little empty. I painted them on the dresser. I painted them on the sides of the television set. I painted them on the bookcase. I painted them on the blinds that I, the sort of the cheap ass blinds that I had.
Sure.
And that worked okay. That was kind of neat. But then I decided to go whole hog. I took several large pieces of cardboard and taped up my windows and had a towel that I would put at the base of the door and another towel I would use to cover the stereo lights,
mm-hmm.
essentially turning my room into a light-proof room so that when you would leave the lights on during the day, once you turned them off at night, it was damn near pitch black and the room was just filled with the universe, so to speak, that you really, for the first couple minutes, I would say, unless you were trying hard, you couldn't really tell where the room ended.
So you more or less created a holodeck in your room.
I kind of created a holodeck, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
And to give you an idea of what a loser I was, at no point during the entire construction of this did I think, chicks are so going to dig this.
But you know what? Now as we look back on our folly times,
mm-hmm.
that is the being a loser that makes you a winner.
I think so. Second to that, I will make the following Paul and Storm recommends, which is a song by a classical piece by Ralph Vaughan Williams called Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis. If you're going to paint your room entirely with luminous star paint stuff, when you unveil the room to yourself or to maybe a lady friend at the time,
who is impressed by such things,
that is an excellent, excellent musical piece to use to unveil the room. And I will leave it at that. It was my wife, who at the time, at a certain point became my girlfriend, thought it was an amazing sort of work of passion.
Yeah. Well, you took it all the way.
I did. She was. I look back on it now, and I see myself as Kirk Douglas as Michelangelo in Lust for Life. I mean, Lust for Glory, or whatever it was. The one where he paints the Sistine Chapel ceiling.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like Falling Down.
No, not Falling Down. I'm not Michael Douglas. Kirk Douglas. Did I say Michael?
Yeah, you said Michael Douglas.
Oh, sorry, Kirk Douglas in Lust for Glory. I believe.
Lust for the Pope. Yes.
Lust for the Pope. Yes. Rex Harrison. Campy movie, but inspired me extremely indirectly to paint my room with stars. Anyway, there's not even so much a point to that story as much as I did a cool, that's one of the cooler things I think I did looking back on it.
That story is its own point.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, how many people can say they created the universe?
Well, one, you.
Well, basically. One me, one person, one mortal.
Yeah, only one that's spoken up, put it
that's
that
right.
way.
That's right.
We're at like the 30 blah, blah, blah minute
30,
mark.
About 35, 36. Yeah.
Got other stuff could say. Nothing I feel like,
I think it could all
say.
Wait though.
It can. Hope you've enjoyed our pretty rambly ramblings of a happy nature this
yeah,
week.
Yeah. Why not? They had no real direction necessarily, but screw
no,
it.
But you don't come to us for direction. We don't know why you come to us, but we're glad that you do.
We certainly are. I have a couple announcements and some proto announcements.
Okay.
Well, first of all, as we have said, we'll be at PAX. If you don't have tickets yet, they're out. Sorry. We are performing in the Saturday night concert at PAX in Seattle. Then on September 16th and 17th, as has been mentioned, Wootstock is coming to the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. The 17th, the Friday show, is, if it's not sold out, it's damn near sold out. The 16th, there are still tickets for. And speaking of those, we may now officially announce a couple more guests for those shows. We have already mentioned that Molly Lewis will be at both shows. Jason Finn, drummer for the Presidents of the United States of America, will be at the Thursday show. We may also announce that at the Thursday show will be Phil Plait, the Bad Astronomer, star of the brand new Bad Universe on Discovery Channel.
And on Saturday night, we're going to have...
Friday night.
Oh, Friday night. Well, he might be there Saturday night.
He could well be there.
But for Woodstock on Friday night, Jamie Ian Swiss, the magician who just did the most stunning things in San Diego.
He was the sleeper hit of the San Diego Woodstock, I think we can safely say.
And OMG, he will be there on the Friday night.
Yes.
More will be coming.
Yes. Here's the proto announcement. We should have some more Woodstock announcements, I would say, within hopefully a week.
Yeah.
And that is all we can really say at this point. Other than yes, more are coming. I think it's safe enough to say that.
Yeah. We'll
and I
be...
say more. I say more because there's more than one of them.
Ooh. We'll leave you guessing as to the number. You can join the numbers of the Pollen Storm Brigade of Minions.
That was a hell of a segue, my friend.
Thank you. You can become a big block dandy. One of the big block dandies, please do tell us what you think a big block dandy is. And I'm Storm.
And I am Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, the crew compartment is breaking up.
Go do things.